Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Welcome to Intercepted. This is our podcast for Acme Packing Company that takes you behind enemy lines. We're going to be talking to Seth Galina of Pro Football Focus. He is a noted or like maybe embarrassed Saints fan. Seth, say what's up to the people.
What's up, guys? How you guys doing?
So you said, I talked to you last week, you said one of the most offensive things that maybe I've ever heard life. You said that if New Orleans got past Tampa Bay in the playoffs, that they would have beaten Green Bay in the NFC Championship game. Like, we did not already see that matchup, and Mercedes Lewis didn't already put a New Orleans Saint on a poster. What is the logic there? Because we didn't dive deep enough into that.
No, there's literally no logic there. That's just my vibes. Fandom. That's my fandom brain coming to the forefront there. I guess the idea is, like, you know, if the Saints would have actually been a good team last year, it would have been because Breeze's arm didn't fall off. And if Breeze's arm is normal, then yeah, they could go anywhere.
But Breeze's arm always falls off. Like, you could,
I know, that's the problem.
It was like Thanksgiving. You could plan on it every year. It's like late November, he no longer can throw the football. It's been the case since like 2018.
I didn't want to believe that, and I still don't want to believe it. Like, I want to chalk up the playoff disappointments in New Orleans, you know, from 2017 to 2020 on like randomness. Cause that makes me feel better than Breeze's arm just falling off. Cause it's like, then you could have just like, you know, eventually just made the decision, especially in 2020 when the arm wasn't there from week one, basically, and just say like, okay, well let's do the Taysom Jameis thing as we get on. But I know that was never going to happen, but it's like that would have been the way to go. But instead, I'm just going to assume that it's all just random luck. Minneapolis Miracle, pass interference, overtime against Minnesota in 2019, Jared Cook dropping the ball in 2020 against Tampa. Like, I'm just going to say that it's all random luck. And the Saints are actually the best team in football over the past 4 years.
That's disgusting. So not embarrassed, just embarrassingly hopeful. Is the way to
but
do
it's
it.
Run out though, as you'll hear as we talk about it. My hope is completely vanished.
I'm so at let, peace yeah, let's talk Saints about being. It. So okay, yeah. Drew Brees, who you just talked about, is no longer the quarterback of the New Orleans Saints. I don't know if people know that. Where is he broadcasting? He's broadcasting, right? Or he's
I think he's doing show. Notre Dame games.
Notre Dame,
or he might be just NBC. Part of the NBC Sunday night. I saw there was a picture of the NBC guys, and he was part of.
Is he going to take your boss's job?
Who knows? That would be nice.
I'm gonna send that to Chris
with my pal Drew Brees.
Yeah, I'm gonna clip this and send it to Chris and be like, look what like, Seth is saying about you, bud. He said your like time is not it, long.
You have to send it to Cincinnati on like a mix CD. In like a bad
they don't have
packaging.
Email there. It's still hard disk physical copies.
Yeah, well, it's Cincinnati, so
well, that explains a lot of Pro Football Focus is charting, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, expectations this year. Jameis Winston is now the quarterback. What is going on in New Orleans?
Well, I think I'm excited to a certain degree. Like, okay, so the first thing is like I have no expectations in terms of winning a lot of games and going back to the playoffs. I'm kind of at peace with it. Like, it's a rebuild. It's a weird rebuild because of the salary cap issues, but it's kind of a rebuild nonetheless. Especially in the depth portions of the roster. So I'm like kind of at peace with it. We had 15 years of unbelievable quarterback play, a Super Bowl, all the playoff games, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm kind of at peace. But I am excited for a new offense. You know, it's been a long time since Breeze had a real live arm. Now, he was a great quarterback, you know, at the end, again, besides 2020. But, you know, it's since, you know, 2011, 2012, whatever, when he could really fire the ball in. And now you're going to Jameis Winston, who obviously has an elite arm strength. You know, he's an elite arm guy. So the offense is going to be different, and it's going to be, I guess, more exciting. It'll be less efficient. There's going to be a lot more interceptions. There's going to be a lot more bad interceptions. But at least there's going to be some big plays down the field. And I think that's probably what I'm the most excited about. Just like a change. Like don't get me wrong. If Drew Brees, like let's say 2019 Drew Brees was still available, then yeah, I'd still want to go with Brees, obviously. But, you know, that ship sailed. And I'm kind of excited to just get to see what a completely different quarterback. And even when Brees was, you know, younger and had more arm strength, it's not like he was ever Jameis Winston. So, yeah, I'm, like, super excited. I think you're going to get more of this downfield play action, you know, less quick game, less, like, you know, super efficient slants and outs and stuff like that. Not that they won't call them, but I think that's what I'm really excited for. It's just a completely different offense than the past, like, 5-6 years.
All right. I already have a couple thoughts on what you just said. I want to start with, is it actually a rebuild because they just traded a third-round pick for Bradley Roby?
Well, okay, yeah, I was gonna say it's like a weird rebuild, but at least they have to like. I think the thing that scares me the most is they keep making these moves. You know, they re-sign Quan Alexander, they go trade for Bradley Roby. They obviously feel pretty good. My biggest concern is there's like literally no depth, and it's like all of a sudden you're trading. You're still trading away draft picks. You're still you're not getting any younger. And what if this team is just not good? And there's a very big chance that this team is not good. And not like, you know, 8-9, 9-8. Like it could be like a 5-win team. So it's like I know they don't think it's a rebuild, but it feels like it should be a rebuild to a certain degree. Now the problem is
it's been something that's been coming for a long time too, you know? Like They've been pushing the cap hits for Drew Brees down the line to the point where everyone knew the year after Drew Brees leaves, they're still going to have to account for them on the cap. So I think everyone thought that it was going to be like a planned stripped down rebuild situation, right? And that's not really what we're seeing. I mean, even on the defensive line, right? I mean, Cameron Jordan's still there. They have Marcus Davenport, and then they added Peyton Turner in the first round. Like, I don't know if they think this is like a rebuild because they're still bringing in guys that in the future will replace guys who have big cap hits right now, which would make more sense in a rebuild if you then traded Cameron Jordan to a different team, you know? But that's not what's happening. The same thing, they took Pete Warner in the second. He's going to be backing up DeMario Davis and Quan Alexander in nickel. And then the third round cornerback that you guys drafted is what, buried in the depth chart now behind Bradley Roby. So it's like all these things are like way down the line things. It's not like you're getting young players reps that you're going to like invest in.
And then again, they'll be proven right if Jameis is fine. And remember, Jameis is not, okay, like Jameis is not taking a lot of money. The other quarterback is, unfortunately. But the quarterback/tight end.
Quarterback.
Is, unfortunately. So it's like, yeah, if it works out and Jameis is really good and they win 11 games and they go to playoffs, then yeah, it's all good. We made the right decisions. We kind of mortgaged the future again. But you kind of knew you were gonna go to the playoffs with Breeze there. We just don't know. Like a lot of, you know, there's a very high variance team because if Jameis is just not good, then they win 5 games, they win 6 games. And then what are you doing? Then you're like, okay, well, the team is not good. And now you just paid Marcus Williams. You know, you got Marshawn Lattimore, you got Cameron Jordan, you have the two tackles. It's like, that's a lot of money still without any depth. And like you said, you're hoping that, you know, the corner Paulson Adebo is like good, but who knows, third round pick, you know, you said the Warner, the linebacker, it's like, oh, maybe. We don't even know if Cesar Ruiz is good. So it's like we just don't know where the Saints are. And if it goes off the rails this season, then you're completely messed up going forward. Because then you have way too much money for people that aren't producing wins. And I think a lot of people in Saints land are thinking that the defense is going to be very good this year. And it's like, it can be, because as we've mentioned, there are some pretty good talent there. You're talking about Davenport and Jordan on the outside at the edge. You're talking about Marshawn Lattimore, who's like up and down, but there's high level play in there. Marcus Williams, high level play and all that stuff. But it's like, this very easily could just not be good. You know, we know how defense works. Like, it's not always going to be great year after year. And it's been pretty good for the past, 3 years. And if it's not good just because of like natural regression, then what are we doing here? Then the rebuild has to start, except, we're tied up with a lot of money and it's going to be tough if the team isn't good. Again, if everything works out and Jameis is this elite quarterback and they go to the playoffs, then yeah, Mickey Loomis is the smartest person in the world. But like, I just don't know if that's going to happen.
So when I look at the Saints defense, the two things that stand out for me in terms of like things the Packers want to attack, right? It's cornerback outside of opposite of Marshawn Lattimore, right? And then it's that interior defensive line, because you guys aren't getting the production that you used to be able to get, even with guys like David Onyemata, right? Like just sneaky ways to get like quality interior play. Those guys are gone now. Am I wrong for thinking that?
Well, yeah, and especially because Bradley Roby's not going to play. Like they just
right, right. Bradley he's not going to be. He's not going to play.
So then I don't even know if it's going to be Paulson and Debo on the outside or somebody else.
And yeah, Crawley looks yummy.
Oh my God, dude,
he looks yummy.
I don't think you understand how Saints fans feel about Ken Crawley, who like every once in a while looks.
We have Kevin King. We know exactly how you feel about Ken Crawley.
So yeah, 100%. Like this is a problem on the outside, and I think also like I'm very torn about Marshawn Lattimore. It was great year one, and it's just been okay since then. And there's obviously some he's a super athlete, so it's like yeah, you're gonna have good play out of him. But I'm not like super sold. And you talk about David Onyemata. Well, he's not playing either. Mm-hmm. Like they're rough in the middle. Obviously you do have players like Cameron Jordan, who's just an elite run defender and a pass rusher. So like maybe he can, I don't know. I'm not saying he's going to slide inside. Like that's not what he does, but like,
I don't think they're going to do that with him consistently.
Yeah. So it's like, well, what's left on the middle? And David Onyemata is a good player. I'm like, really, one of my favorite, like out of nowhere stories, but like if he's not playing, then who's left? Like, I don't even, does Shai Tuttle still play for the Saints? Like, I don't even know who the hell is left on this team. And it's like, wow, yeah, he does play for the Saints. Like again, he's like a solid player and he can have his flashes, but it's like, yeah, I agree. The inside and outside defensive line, outside at cornerback is interesting for the Saints. And even like, man, look, Demario Davis, top linebacker. Mm-hmm. Quan was okay last year. And they've cut him. Like, let's not forget they cut him and they re-signed him like 2 weeks ago. Now, that definitely was probably a money thing partly, but it's not like they cut him and then re-sign him a day later. It took him like 3-4 months to re-sign him. So like,
right. And even then, if it is a money thing, it's still a money thing, where it's like,
yeah,
your value to the team was not what we signed up for. That is still a reflection of like who he is as a player to a certain
extent. Yeah. And it's like, they've been looking for someone to play next to Demario Davis for a long time. And they just haven't been able to find the guy. And I think they just like the type of attributes that Quan brings. He's fast and whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure he makes himself right enough as a linebacker, like getting in the right spots. I don't think he does that enough. So that is my biggest concern. I do like Dennis Allen's defense and what he does. It's very interesting. But is it just better when you have better players? Probably. Like anyone else, it's just better when you have better players. And they're short in a lot of positions. And if anyone goes down, the linebacker goes down, if a safety goes down, if Chauncey in the slot goes down, then I have no clue who else is left on the roster.
two things real quick before we get to the offense. I am shocked that you like David Onyemata, who went to a Canadian
school. University of Manitoba, baby. Yeah,
of course. Well, of course.
You need to watch like YouTube at David Onyemata, Manitoba, you know, highlights, whatever. It's not real. It's like fake. Just
does Canadian college ball play a yard off the line of scrimmage with their defensive lineman too?
Yeah, so it's like a yard off the ball, and he's still absolutely killing anyone, any guard in front of him. It's really, it's a great highlight tape.
I remember I watched the Akeem Hicks film back in the day when he was out there in Canada, and it was like absurd. So yeah, Canada not really producing offensive linemen like that. But you got Tardif, right?
Yeah, he went to McGill. He's from here. He's from Montreal. And there's a guy who made the Seahawks, or he got some preseason reps this year for the Seahawks from Montreal, too.
I remember Eric Armstead's brother, for those who don't know, had a heart condition at USC, which is part of the reason why Eric Armstead ended up at Oregon instead of going to USC when USC was locking down all those guys. He spent I think it was just a year in the CFL, and he was just smoking some of those Canadian linemen. He ended up signing like a pretty hefty UDFA contract with the Patriots, and then, you know, health concerns ended up leading to him not making that roster, but he was crazy in his year in Canada.
Well, so we don't have to get into this too deep, but like one of the things is like in Canada, because of the quotas of like when the CFL, some of the quotas of like how many Canadians have to be on the field and so on and so forth, you end up with Canadian offensive lines and American defensive lines. And you can imagine how that
it's goes. A mismatch a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, just population wise, right? There's not, it's hard to find those bodies, and it's even harder when you have a smaller population, you know, just from that perspective. The other thing that I wanted to touch on the defense, DeMario Davis, he is the run stopper for that inside run game. I don't know how you feel about his skill set specifically, but like when I watch him, it's almost like, Dante Hightower-y, but like he's faster.
Yeah, and I
find like he'll blitz, he'll fit the inside run, but he's also like has a certain level of foot speed. He's not like a Will linebacker type of fast, but like for a Mike, it's definitely not below average.
Right, and it's funny you bring up, you know, Will and Mike, because they can't figure out where they want to play him either. He's like good at both positions, just because like, you know, if you're a good linebacker, you're probably going to be good at both positions, but like, this is always a problem with Quan there. Maybe, you know, Quan plays Will and DeMario plays Mike with the kid out of Florida with the long hair. Oh my God, I forgot his name.
Anzalone.
I think
you cover Anzalone football for a living. You're a Saints fan. Goodness gracious.
He played like Anzalone played Mike and DeMario played Will. I think he's a Will, because he can do the type of stuff that Wills kind of have to do in coverage sometimes. You know, thinking about some of the stuff that like, you know, KJ Wright will have to do in Seattle back in the day. But so to get back to your point, like, yeah, he's fast, he's instinctual. And then you see it with how he just can cover people, you know, in a regular down and distance, whatever. But, you know, the Saints and Dennis Allen loves to send those like, you know, 5-0, 6-0, mostly 6-0, I would say, fronts. And, you know, cover up all the offensive linemen, you know, everyone's in a gap type of situation on third down, but then he rarely actually sends all six, just like straight up cover zero. And what you see, why he's able to like, you know, play around with the type of blitzes from that look is because you have DeMario Davis, who is so fast and so instinctual that he can be on the line of scrimmage. And then on the snap, drop out, and they'll bluff a blitz, and then he's going to cover someone who's in the slot on the other side or whatever. So like that's the type of player you're getting out of DeMario Davis. But again, they can't figure out who to play with him, and maybe, you know, just more chemistry with Quan will do them good.
Yeah, and when you talk about those 6-0 looks, because we haven't conditioned the Acme Packing Company viewership to like have terminal football brain like we do in terms of like X and O's, right?
I want your listeners to understand, and we don't have to get into it, the most terminal football brain on the planet is Justice Mosqueda. Okay, we don't have to get into it anymore, but like that is the ultimate. That Justice's brain is going to be studied by scientists for a long time. after he's gone. Okay, yeah, so 6-0 looks. Basically what I mean is everyone is standing up. They do this on third down a lot, and you'll see it. I'm sure you'll see it on Sunday. Everybody is standing in front of basically an offensive lineman. And they're trying to show one more, like, so 6 versus the 5 offensive linemen, rather than like a normal setup, which, you know, you have 4 defensive linemen and then the 2 linebackers are standing there 5 yards deep. And that's the, you know, your regular defense. So what the Saints love to do on third down is they'll show you that they are going to come with a heavy, heavy blitz, you know, putting 6 guys up in the line of scrimmage. And then, like I said, Dennis Allen, the defensive coordinator, rarely just blitzes everybody. He'll make it look like it is, and then you'll try to say, okay, well, these 5 guys are coming, and you protect those against those 5 guys, except he's actually sending a different 4 guys, and everyone else is dropping off into his zone coverage. So that's a big deal. That is a big thing that Dennis Allen loves to do on third down.
And it changes how the quarterback has to think pre-snap, right? Which is why they do it. If you want to get the running back involved in the passing game, right? You want to run a route, you only have 5 offensive linemen to handle 6 potential blitzers, and they're all at the line of scrimmage, right? So you have to honor it. So you either have to make the decision, is the quarterback thinking hot here in terms of, like, is he just trying to get the ball out of his hands as quickly as possible? Or are you going to use that running back to help in pass protection, right? And there's pluses and minuses to either, and you can play games with that. That's really the big issue with those. A lot of people call them mug fronts, if you want to look that up. Offensively, actually, let's toss it to break. We'll talk about the offense after the break.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a 2-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
All right. And we're back with Seth Galina from Pro Football Focus. I want to talk about the offense now, right? You talked about Jameis Winston. He's going to throw the ball deep. Here is the problem that I have with that. Everyone talks about Jameis Winston and his interceptions, and a lot of people bring up, I think, a very valid point that, like, a lot of those interceptions happen late in games or on long downs when it's less important to not throw interceptions, right? It's not like he was throwing those picks first and 10 on the 20-yard line or 25-yard line now, I guess. Here's the problem. I don't see the guys he can throw deep to on this roster, right? Like, is he throwing deep balls to Tre'Quan Smith? Because Tre'Quan Smith isn't Chris Godwin. He isn't Mike Evans. And right now they don't have Michael Thomas.
Tre'Quan Smith is just probably not that good. I don't know.
He's not that guy. He's not that guy.
He's just not that guy. He's just not that guy. So like, yeah, I agree. And you have no Michael Thomas, which means all these type of number one receiver routes or X receiver routes, we'd call them, are going to go to Marquez Callaway. So it's like, yeah, okay. If you're a fantasy player, you pick up Marquez Callaway because you're getting 10 targets a game or 8 targets a game or something like that. But if you're talking like trying to win a football game, that's a problem. That's a big problem. I liked a little bit from what I saw from little Jordan Humphrey last year. I do like Tre'Quan Smith once in a while.
He's an NFL player. I just don't understand. Like,
yeah,
we're gonna put Tre'Quan Smith in a position where he can win or lose us games. Like,
yeah, and he's not like when have we seen him as this like take the top off a defense type of guy? That's not really his
AAC
game.
AAC defenders at USC or UCF? Yeah,
exactly. Like, that's not really – that's his game. And so
the one guy they have on the roster who I'd be worried that can actually do that is Dante Harris, but he's so damn small that they just keep him as a return man.
Yeah, he's like the number one return man. He's a very good return man.
He's great. His stats at Assumption are hilarious. He had like 20 return touchdowns at like a – I think it was a D2 school. Maybe it was D3.
And he's returned it in the NFL too. He has a couple.
Yeah, he's great. He's
honestly, so the game changes in against Tampa Bay in the playoff game if they don't get called back for like a legal block on a return for a touchdown in like the first quarter or something. Anyways, so it's like he is a take a top off the defense type of guy. But again, it's like, is he yes, he has speed. But like, there's a little more. Like, it's not just like, oh, you have speed, so you're DeSean Jackson. Oh, you have speed, so you're even Teddy Ginn. Like, I don't know if he's either of those guys. And then it's like, well, who's left? It's a receiving core that looks infinitely better when Michael Thomas is back. But right now, you know, week one, I just don't know who can get open against, man. We don't know anything. Like, can Marquez Callaway just get open against you know, Jair Alexander? Like, I don't – can little Jordan Humphrey get open against Kevin King? I don't know, man. That makes me nervous. Tight end situation is better. Adam Trautman could be a very, very good tight end. He's in his second year. And then you have Taysom Hill, who will play tight end. I like him a lot as a tight end. Make sure I'm clear on that. But then it's like, again, it's like you're not winning games because you have these like you have like a couple good tight ends. So that it makes me very nervous.
And I think a lot of people are going to listen to this and they're going to say, Michael Thomas isn't really a burner, right? I mean, NFL DVs are calling him Slant Boy and stuff like that. Well, the speed guy was Emmanuel Sanders and they haven't really replaced him. And that's not replacing Emmanuel Sanders and then also losing Michael Thomas, that's really the issue. It's not one of them. It's the fact you're getting both of those things at the same time.
Plus Jared Cook.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like those are three like top receivers. You know, Jared Cook was inconsistent, but I think his top games were as good as any tight end.
Yeah, he's got dropsies, but he's athletic and he's hard to match up against. Like, he can break your defense. He can change how you structure mid-game.
100%. And they were using him on the routes that they would give these like underneath option routes that have been going to, you know, Kamara and Michael Thomas. And then before him, like, you know, Darren Sproles and stuff like that. And they were giving Jared Cook those routes. That's like high praise from Sean Payton if you're getting those routes in the Saints offense. So it's like you're losing Thomas, you're losing Emmanuel Sanders, who stepped up in a big way. I don't know if he lived up to expectations per se, but I also think he would have looked better if Breeze could actually do anything in 2020. And then Jared Cook, who I really, really liked as a Saint. So you're replacing him with guys who we just don't know anything about, or guys that we know about and who aren't good. Tre'Quan Smith. Chris Hogan. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Former Packer Ty Montgomery. Like, I don't know.
And he's playing wide receiver now. And I think it's interesting. Juwan Johnson is playing tight end for you guys. He was a wide receiver at Oregon.
Yeah, and he played tight end. He played receiver last year, I believe, and they must have moved him.
Why are you guys rostering four quarterbacks? Someone explain that to me. Is it just because you spent a fourth round pick on Ian Book and you don't want to cut him?
That has to be it.
Dude, it's like, wait, Trevor Siemian beat out the draft pick, so I guess we're keeping the draft pick and we can't let Taysom go because Taysom does all these other things.
Yeah. Like the Ian Book thing, I mean, I had to watch this guy play a lot. I don't know why I watched so much Ian Book tape. And it's just like, there's no way you saw an NFL quarterback. And there's absolutely even less of a chance you saw a fourth round pick. And here we are. He's on the roster and he was a fourth round pick.
He's going to be a healthy scratch, right?
Yeah, 100%.
He has to be. I don't even know if like Trevor Siemian is game day active. I don't know why. What does Trevor Siemian bring to the table that Taysom Hill doesn't? Like, this could be a two quarterback team. I don't understand why they're keeping four. It doesn't really make sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense to me either.
Another thing that I wanted to point out, we had this conversation on your podcast, Too High, with Deontay Lee, and Deontay brought up a point that made a lot of sense to me. So it was basically, you know, Alvin Kamara out of the backfield, you almost have to treat him like a slot receiver, right? So when Michael Thomas was there, let's think about last year, right? You had Manny Sanders stretching the defense vertically, right? Jared Cook could do a lot of things athletically that could cause you matchup problems, right? Then if you put Michael Thomas in the slot and Alvin Kamara was running routes out of the backfield, it's tough to rotate coverage to all those things, right? So now that like Alvin Kamara doesn't have that slot receiver opposite of him, you know, Michael Thomas being able to do a lot of the quick game stuff and, you know, Jared Cook, what does that mean for like Alvin Kamara's production? Because I look at this offense, and again, we just talked about the wide receivers. You're pretty high on Troutman. I don't know if I see that with Troutman. I guess we'll see. I mean, he's a pretty young player. But what are the win conditions for this team? Because it's, to me, they have an advantage on the offensive line relative to the Packers' defensive line, at least their interior players, right? And then Alvin Kamara needs to get like four touchdowns. And I just don't know if teams are going to be treating him the same when Michael Thomas isn't opposite him.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really hard. And I also say, like, there was something about Breeze, especially as later in his career, getting a guy like Kamara, where I felt like he would almost bypass some of his reads, knowing that he was going to get a one-on-one with Kamara on a checkdown.
I mean, it's not a bad plan.
Right. And it's like, there it is. And let me get Kamara in space. I think of so many different plays over the past, right over the ball. You know what I mean? He's the check down, but really he's the first read because Breeze knows that, you know, based on the pre-snap that everyone's going to get run off. And then here's Kamara. And it's like, that's not, let me tell you something. That is not Jameis Winston's game. So there goes a lot of touches, I think. That means you're going to have to start manufacturing touches for Alvin Kamara, not just on screens and stuff, because you can't just count on screens going 70 yards.
Screens are sloppy plays too. Like in terms of once you call it, like anything can really happen because defensive linemen, linebackers, they react to it at different times. It's not always what you look. It's what you want out of the look. It's a lot of, I hope this goes right.
So it's like, well then, are we going to start scheming him more down the field? Like, is that a winning business model? Because you don't have a choice because you just don't feel like you can scheme.
But then you're sucking five-man protection, though, right?
It's and a problem.
The Packers are going to blitz. I mean, I think they're going to be just talking about the Packers structure. I have a big post that's ready to go about the Packers defense and their structure right now. I haven't hit publish because I want to see what it looks like week one before I pull the trigger on this is what they were running in the preseason. I want to proclaim that I know what they're doing, right? But what they were doing in the preseason, I would be surprised if they weren't a top 10 team in base defense because of how they match up the personnel. If you bring, you know, two tight ends out or a tight end and a fullback out, they're pretty much going to play base. That's kind of their game plan. And then they just blitz the hell out of it because they're going to play out of too high. So they're going to try to win a gap back with blitzes and stunts within the box, and that allows their safeties to play outside of the box and fit the run alleys. The problem I see is if you really want to get the running back involved, you're putting all of that on the offensive line, which, you know, they have a solid offensive line, but also the quarterback to be able to see what the offensive line is letting free. You know, when you have to let a guy loose, can Jameis Winston see it? And that's kind of the trade-off that you have if you're going to try to do anything vertical with Kamara.
Yeah, and as I kind of mentioned before, like, we still don't really know about the interior of the offensive line. Armstead, Ramczyk, solid tackles. But I really believe that even though they'll have, like, you know, these, like, Saints Hall of Famers, you know, and then, like, the Saints Ring of Honor at guard throughout this Breeze tenure, because they've had supposedly great guards, and they have had great guards, I do believe that Breeze, is the way he plays, makes the guards look probably better. And I'm really not trying to, like, be like, hey, yeah, Jari Evans and Carl Nix were bad players. Like, clearly they're good players. I'm not saying that. But I think, like, they kind of got into the situation where they could get rid of, like, a Larry Warford and bring in Cesar Ruiz and just be like, all right, well, it's okay because, well, you know, like, we're going to be fine. And, like, Andrus Peed, and they're going to pay Andrus Peed and be like, all right, well, we're going to be fine because Drew Brees is the quarterback. And it's like, is that going to be the case with a different quarterback? I, you know, I still have high hopes for Brees, still a young kid. Eric McCoy at center is really good. Pete's a different story. But, like,
let's talk about Pete, because Pete, you know, first round pick, and then he got a big deal. And I think everyone, I think when people read that, right, and they say, oh, he was a first round pick and the team wanted to keep him on the team, they assume that he's good. But I do have a lot of doubts about him specifically in pass pro.
I just, it's, you know, it's one thing when you have Max Unger and Larry Warford, you know, at center guard, and you still have Armstead and Ramczyk. So he's like a one bad piece out of five. You know, you live with it. Not the end of the world. Not everyone can have a, you know, five-star offensive line. Eric McCoy's in his third year. Cesar Ruiz is going into his second year. You know, Armstead has had some injury problems. So it's like, man, now it's like you're not just the black sheep out of a four stars next to you. You are one of, you know, three players in the middle that might not be great. That makes it even worse. And he's not great. Like, I don't know what to say. He's not a great, he's a good, at best, he's a good player. At worst, he's a turnstile. So it's like, I don't know much. I don't know. They like him clearly. Maybe.
He's good in the run game, right? And that's one of the other things. He's a big dude. Like, you talk about Walford and you talk about how Breeze can make some of these guys' inefficiencies kind of mask him, right? And it's because he gets the ball out so fast, right? So okay, you're a good run blocker and I can get the ball out fast, well then pass protection play at guard doesn't really matter as much, right? So it does change a little bit. That's why I'm like wondering about the structure of this team, because you come into the podcast and you're like, yeah, deep shots with Jameis Winston, and I'm like, I don't know if they can do that.
Who? No, I agree. With who? I just think they will be in a mold that probably is similar to Tampa Bay, in that it's going to be like a vertical downhill rushing attack paired with that, with a vertical play action game, rather than them spreading out more. I think they'll try and do it to protect Jameis as much. And again, it's like, I don't know. We're going to see right away, like, who does Sean Payton want on the field? Like, does he want, like, again, because no Michael Thomas, it's like, who does he trust to play on the field? He trusts Taysom Hill. I feel like he trusts Adam Troutman. Well, that takes away a lot of what you want to do if you're going to have to play those two guys. Like, does he trust Tre'Quan Smith to be the real number two receiver? I doubt it. But then it's like, who's left, man? Well, Jordan Humphrey, like, does he trust him? Like, he played well, but, like, I don't know.
The other thing, too, is, like, Taysom Hill. All right, if Taysom's going to play fullback and Troutman is going to play tight end, there's not that many ways to get the running back involved in the passing game when you have a fullback out there. you know, unless it's just quick stuff, which, okay, you can run quick stuff. But if your entire game is we're going to be I formation running quick game passes to Alvin Kamara, there's a lot better ways and a lot easier ways to win football games than that.
Yeah, that's going to be really difficult on them. And I also wonder, another thing that the Saints have been really good at is, I don't know how to say this, like, yes, I work for PFF, but they're kind of like going against the grain in a sense. And like, they'll run the ball on first down and they'll run the ball on second down. And what they've been really, really good at is not getting any negative plays. They're like number one every year and basically like, percentage of runs that at least gain like 1 yard or something in the run game on like first down and second down. So it's like you can just play in that mold where you can be in a third and five, third and six with Drew Brees because he's Drew Brees. And it's like you he's a, it's like we're talking about one of the best quarterbacks of all time. So you can be in any down and distance with him, but you can be in these like quote unquote manageable third downs, which as we've kind of begun to understand don't actually exist. Like the only manageable third down is like third and one per the analytics. But you could do that with a Hall of Fame quarterback. So now it's like, okay, well, you're going to run the ball on first down. You're going to run the ball on second and 10, whatever it is. You're getting to third and seven, third and six with Jameis, who let me tell you is not a Hall of Fame quarterback. Like, Is that a winning business model?
Jameis isn't going to try to throw for seven on a third and six either. You know,
exactly.
He's going to try to flip the field, and it's going to flip the field one way or the other. You know,
exactly.
This deep shot is going to lead to a punt. It's going to be an arm punt, or it's going to be a big catch. Right. So that'll be interesting. So this line is at 4.5 right now. Right. The game moved to Jacksonville, obviously, because of the hurricane. That's unfortunate for Saints fans. I know people in Louisiana right now, a couple of them like just got power back. So I think Saints fans have a lot more things in mind than making this trip to Jacksonville right now. I think it's going to be a big Green Bay crowd. When I say 4.5, where does your mind go? Who are you taking?
You know, I think you still got to, that's nothing. Honestly, I just don't know. I don't know. I don't think this Saints team, it's funny. I came into this when we started recording, I was like, I have no expectations, but in the back of my mind, I was like, you know, it could be like a 12-win team. And then going through the roster with you, it's, oh my God.
There's a lot of holes, man. There's a lot of holes. And I think the fact that they're getting an offense that knows what they are, right? Going year three into this offense and a defense that you don't have much film on is going to hurt, right?
I would love to play Carolina week one. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, everyone would love to play Carolina week one. I mean, Sam Darnold.
I know, but they're in my division at least. Like, yeah. At least like it could be. The 4.5 seems very small. I think they win. I would assume Green Bay wins by a couple touchdowns. I'm holding out hope, but I would assume that they win by a couple touchdowns or like 10 points or something like that.
So how does that game play out in your mind? Like, I'm asking you for not even just like an end result prediction, like coming into the game first quarter, then what happens?
Well, I really believe, I like really, really believe it plays out kind of like I was just saying, where they're going to try and run the ball early and it's not going to work. And then it's like, we're in a lot of third downs where either, like you said, we're either punting or we're throwing an interception. And you know, I love the Packers offense. We talked about it last week on my podcast. Like you said, the Packers offense is great. I did a lot of time studying. I probably studied the Packers offense more than I rewatched the Saints 2020 season. So like that offense is scary. It moved the ball. I don't remember how many points, 30 plus points against a complete Saints team last year, relatively. So I would imagine it happens again. And yeah, I think what scares me the most, like I said, is they're going to try and run the football and it's not going to work. Even with Kamara there, maybe Kamara breaks a couple, but it's really, you know, overall, it's just not going to work. And they're going to be giving the ball back to Green Bay way too much. And then Green Bay is going to build a pretty big lead early on.
One last thing, because I want to see what your perspective on this is, because I've never gotten a clear answer on it. We see offensive coordinators for big-time offenses move on to head coaching jobs all the time. And you know, Peyton Manning has gotten a lot of people jobs. Tom Brady has gotten a lot of people jobs. Even Aaron Rodgers has gotten people jobs, right? Pete Carmichael is just staying as the offensive coordinator for Sean Payton. And I understand, like, Pete isn't calling plays, but, like, neither is Bieniemy, and everyone talks about Bieniemy every year, right? What is the deal with Pete Carmichael? Is he just like the NFL's Brent Venables, where Venables is just the DC at Clemson, and he's just like, yeah, no, this is a cushy gig, dude. Like, I'm not going to leave it, and they pay me good money. Like, why would I ruin that by exposing myself to a head coaching job? It's pretty hard to do that. I have something nice here going on. How do Saints fans think of Pete Carmichael, and have you guys gotten any indication on, like, why this guy hasn't gotten a job after being the OC for Sean Payton for, like, 10 years?
Man, I wish I could tell you. And the thing is, they've had OCs before Carmichael, and, you know, Joe Lombardi was the OC. Or he might not have been the OC, now that I'm thinking about it.
I think he was quarterback coach, but I mean, he got a lot of puff pieces written about him before he took an OC job somewhere else.
In Detroit, and it wasn't very good.
Right.
And then I guess before that, was it Doug Marrone?
That sounds right.
Doug Marrone was the OC.
Peyton guy, because they're all Parcells dudes.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Doug Marrone. The same thing with what's his name? Dan Campbell in Detroit. He was a Parcells guy. That's kind of like what that tree is kind of breeded off. It's like Sean Payton and then the Belichick guys. Those are the Parcells dudes still kicking around.
So I just wonder if Pete maybe like this is looking into his psyche that I don't know, but like maybe he just sees them go leave the Saints and it's not great. Obviously, we just saw Joe Brady do it and that was good. But maybe he just sees them and says, man, I don't want to go. Or maybe you're right and he wants to like draw up plays. Like, and honestly, like, I think you know this as well as I do. Like, some people just want to draw up plays. I just want to draw up plays. Brent Venables literally just wants to draw up plays.
And I mean, that's full-time gigs for some of these teams. I mean, like Andy Reid in Kansas City, a lot of his stuff was, I'm spacing on his name, Brad Childress, who was there. And he was like, spread game analyst or something like that. Like his job is like eat film, find cool stuff, bring it to Andy Reid. Like
that's it.
And then you see it in college football all the time too, with like Saban and all these big SEC schools who can afford to pay former head coaches to like rehab their image and then also like give their families health insurance by giving them a gig instead of just taking buyout money. And they're keeping them as like analysts, and their entire job, like Sarkisian, right, for example, before Lane Kiffin left, his job was just like watch film, dude, and tell us what you think.
Yeah, and like in college, like when you're an analyst, I don't know the rules exactly, but like you're literally like not allowed to talk to the players. Basically,
you're technically you have to not stay. Supposed to be an on-field coach. When Sarkisian went on the field for Alabama as their offensive coordinator, that was not the first time the Crimson Tide players had ever talked to Steve Sarkisian. Like that, you're not supposed to, but like. Okay, who's watching? Where's the enforcement arm? We've seen the NCAA's enforcement arm recently. It doesn't seem very powerful.
It's very weak.
It's not good unless you have a snitch and documentation.
I just wonder, like, anyways, getting back, I looked up Brad Childress. His title was literally spread game analysis.
Yeah.
Analyst.
Yeah.
Like, that's not real. That's just fake. That's like, hey, like you said, go watch film, and because I don't have time to watch App State or whoever or Arizona State or whatever, so you go do it and then be like, hey, this is a cool trick play that they ran, like, great, thanks Brad.
I think people would be surprised now, look at those Brad. Type he's, of guys he's there
on
are
the black market preseason tape guy. There's a lot of those guys, but the thing is like we believe that everybody just wants to be a head coach, and I don't think that's necessarily true. And Carmichael might be a good example of someone who is like, yeah, I'm good. I'm not in the news often. I have a great job and I just get to coach football and like draw post routes and stuff. And like, that's fine.
And I think people don't realize like how many decisions some of these guys have to make too, in terms of like head coach and general manager. I saw even the slightest bit with the XFL. I know it's very different than the NFL structure, but like all the little decisions you have to do where you think you're taking a general manager job and you're like, yes, I finally get to pick the players. And then what actually happens is like people are asking you like constantly, like, what color of paint do you think that we should make this room? You know, it's stuff like that where people, the bandwidth of people gets stretched so thin that you can't do some of the things that you actually wanted to do. And even in draft season, you see, I mean, it doesn't get reported, right? But there's a lot of people who pay a lot of people to watch film for them. Like they're former head coaches who like maybe this guy has a good quarterback background or a good offensive line background. And that's the guy that they pay to like give them a overview of like, hey, how good are these guys actually? Because the scouts, really what their job is intel. It's not to break down film. It's intel. And to be troops on the ground and like, hey, what's really going on in this program? And like, is there something that we should be aware about? You know? And I don't think people realize like how divorced some of these decisions are.
It's funny. You mentioned the scouts being like about intel. And that's obviously 100% true. Now, obviously you watch film, do whatever.
Yeah. They know, like, they know ball, but that's not like that's Bill not like Belichick isn't making decisions off of what scouts think. That's not exactly what's happening.
So like I was at Vanderbilt this summer. Just like kind of watching practice and stuff. And there was a scout from an NFL team and he was just like, I was like, oh, you know, what's your schedule like? And he's like, yo, here at Vanderbilt today, you know, tomorrow morning I'm at East Tennessee and then I'm at, or Eastern Kentucky. And then I'm at, you know, UT. And just like, did he watch practice? Nope. He was just like, let me get names. Let me talk to the people who are in charge of the kids and let me get names.
Find the snitch.
And that's my job.
Because that's what you need. Yeah. You need the snitch for the intel and you have to build relationships. It's big time. Like it's a lot more like networking than it is in terms of the importance of it. Right. And obviously teams structure it in different ways. Like the Green Bay Packers very much are like our scout. Right. Like that's kind of a big part of their program. But for a lot of places around the league, it's a lot of networking. It's a lot of like rubbing elbows so that like when something does pop up and you could say, you know, hey, what's really happening with like this Dwayne Haskins thing? You don't have to guess, right? You can get information on that.
I remember, so like my first year coaching college football, it hit me, this is kind of going back to earlier what you're saying, but like, I was like, oh, my head coach is an administrator. Like, he was a defensive coordinator at the college level here and like blah, blah, blah. And he was this really good coach and blah, blah, blah. And then he became a head coach. And it's like, well, you're not calling the defense anymore. Like you're just handling, like you said, like what color paint are we going to use in the bathrooms? Yeah. You know, so it's like, yeah, I saw that right away. And I was like, oh, this is very different. And that also like when I see guys who, like Sean Payton, like Kyle Shanahan, like whoever else, calling plays still. That's I have a lot of respect for that because I know how much how time consuming
from kind the of field.
Having two jobs
from the
that's whole don't get me started on that, like calling an offense from the field where that is a full time job, but then you also have this other full time job of being a head coach of a football, of an NFL team. That's crazy.
Yeah. Those type of guys, that's where it gets into the, like, yeah, football speaks to them type of thing where it's like, yeah, they probably don't think about anything other than being a head coach and football field stuff, you know, where it's like, there's just not enough time in the world to be able to do those two gigs and then also have a life on top of that.
No, I was just saying, and you're cramming that. It's not like, oh, well, it's a 1 year thing. It's like, it's a 5 month. You're cramming a year's worth into 5 months during the season. It's tough. Anyways. Yes.
Thank you for having me. I was just going to say, thanks for joining us. I know we went on a little rant at the end, but if you stuck with us, you probably enjoyed it, frankly. Tell the people where they can find your work, Seth.
PFF.com, PFF_Seth on Twitter, and the Too High podcast with me and Deontay Lee on wherever you can find, wherever you listen to your podcast.
And that's great stuff too. If you really like nerdy football stuff, terminal football brain content, it's very good because those two are very bright and you're going to be hearing from them a long time. Like what, Deontay's going to be like an NFL DC in like 5 years?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I'm still going to be a PFF. Deontay is going to be the DC for like the Cleveland Browns or something. So that's
really don't weird. Put that on him. He doesn't deserve that. He's got a kid, man. He has a family.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Seth.
Goodbye.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.